You never know how the time is going to work on a day like this when we have the choir singing some songs and I'm going to be sharing a few words. And so you may be getting out of here a little earlier today. And that way you can join us at New Burlington and listen to us again, all right? But it's good to be here today and to worship the Lord and to praise His holy name. I stop and I think about during this time of the year. In fact, the choir sang at the old car club, classic cars we talk about. There are certain things that are classics, you know, things that have endeared themselves to our hearts. And I think about classic cars, the 57 Chevrolet, and I know that Chester has a classic car that Bonnie likes to speed in. What is that called, a 59? 57 Thunderbird, okay. So if any of you would like to run around in that, I'm sure Chester would allow you to borrow that for the Christmas season. But classic cars, we talk about classic movies. And last week I talked a little bit about It's a Wonderful Life at the New Burlington Church. But we talk about It's a Wonderful Life and The Miracle on 34th Street. Charlie Brown's Christmas is a classic, as well as Rudolph with Burl Ives. I think they've been showing that. When I was a kid, I was watching that, and they're still showing it. I mean, it never wears out. It's like The Wizard of Oz. Then, of course, I think about classic books. John Milton's Paradise Lost or John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress that I've encouraged you to read. I think about Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, which is a wonderful book to read, and it's been put into a play as well as a movie, and various places have been able to produce that and put that on in the recent weeks. Then I think quickly is becoming a classic is C.S. Lewis's book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That is a wonderful movie. It was written primarily for children, but there's so much in that that applies to us as adults and that really really communicates with us with all of its allegories and analogies and things of that nature. But here is a story of four children, Peter, Edmund, Susan, and Lucy, who were in London during the 1940s, and the German Blitzkrieg is happening in London, and the buildings are being destroyed, and people are fleeing for safety, and so they hustle these four children out to the countryside to an old professor's house, and it's 10 miles from any railroad station, a couple of miles from any post office, and there they have the run of the place, but they have to be quiet because he's an older professor and we older people love quiet in our homes, right? And so when the grandkids invade our house and all of a sudden it's noise everywhere, we're going, oh, I got to get used to this again. But anyway, I would really have loved to have been those four children because I also love, as a child, exploring old houses and attics and barns and sheds and all those sorts of things because there was all sorts of treasures hidden away. My grandpa had a garage, and it was actually built next to what used to be an old hotel in the little town that I grew up in. I loved going up on the second floor because there were all sorts of stuff up there in that old hotel, two old pump organs, you know, and I always thought about reconditioning those, but I never did. But I think about Peter, Edmund, Susan, and Lucy. They came to this old professor's house, and they had just had so much fun exploring all the house. And one day they went into this room where there was a great big suit of armor. They went to another room where there was this huge world globe. They went into another room where there was books as big as the Bibles in the churches. And then they went into another room where there was this blue bottle sitting on the windowsill. And at the end of the hallway was this door. And they thought, well, it's probably locked. And so they didn't even give it a nudge. But Lucy decided that she was going to try it. And so she opened the closet door, the wardrobe door, and there were all these long fur coats hanging in that closet. The smell of mothballs began to fill the air. And she decided that she was going to travel back through those fur coats into the darkness to see what it held for them. And so she went back into all these fur coats and she felt them, you know, rubbing against her face. And then she began to notice that the fur coats began to turn to the bristly pine needles of pine trees. And she began to hear the crunch of snow beneath her feet and the snowflakes falling on her cheeks. And she found herself entering into a whole new world where there was nothing but snow everywhere. And it was what she would soon learn was Narnia, but there was this lamppost sitting there in the middle of it. And she walked over to that lamppost because it drew her. And there was a faun, a half-goat, half-man by the name of Mr. Tumnus who greeted her and began to tell her all about the magical world of Narnia and how great it was and how beautiful it had been. But now there was a wicked witch who had cast Narnia under her spell, and it was now always winter and never Christmas. It was always winter and never Christmas. Narnia was cursed. It had fallen under the spell of this white witch. Relationships was cursed. Humanity was cursed. And when I think about the story of the Chronicles of Narnia and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I cannot but help think C.S. Lewis may not have intended to write this allegory, but when you write a story, all stories are basically based upon a biblical story. Now think about the book of Genesis and how God created this world and how everything was good, how everything was perfect. And he put a man and a woman, our first parents, into that garden, and he said, it's all good. It's perfect. It's beautiful. But a pretender prince who had fallen from heaven, who didn't like God's plan, wandered into that garden and deceived and beguiled Adam and Eve. And as a result of that, all of humanity became cursed. Our relationships became cursed. Our lives became cursed. We began to live under the curse of sin. And we find that it was a very difficult time. The cold wintry spell began to bite into people's lives. A biting cold had chased away the joy. In Narnia, there was no more gifts, there was no more singing, there was no more joy, and so we also lost that joy. But we find in the book of Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, the very first gospel message, when God promised to send a Redeemer. And for centuries, the people waited for the coming of the Messiah. And then we find these words in the book of Galatians chapter 4, where Paul says, very simply, he says, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth her son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons and daughters. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a child. And if a child, then an heir of God through Christ. In other words, in the fullness of time, at the right time, the appropriate time, the exact time, God sent forth his son. And if you go back and look at history, the Roman Empire had the world under its thumb. And there was the peace of the Rome, you know, the road system and the technology and the language system. But we also know that at that time, even as today, the world was under the curse. And Rome, of course, in Rome, there was multitudes of religious faiths, multitudes of religious alternatives. But the people were spiritually bankrupt. The mystical faith did not fulfill the desires of their own heart. I mean, God's image in their own heart was about a faint memory. And they were struggling to find an answer to the void that lay within. Gross immorality and decadence had filled their hearts. Selfishness and greed had consumed them. And there was this biting chill of sin that had gripped a hold of their lives. And so it says, in the fullness of time, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law. In other words, he sent him at the right time to deal with this curse of humanity on this world, to redeem them, that is, to rescue them, to ransom them, to bring them back home. And what was the specific reason? So that we might become the children of God. So that we might enter into a relationship with the Savior. And we've been talking about that throughout this Christmas season, how God invites us into a relationship with him. And so he invited them to come home, to come back to who they were created to be. He created us to be redeemed, a people, a child of God, part of the family of God. Now I think of a writer in the 3rd century, his name was Cyprian. And he's writing a letter to a young man by the name of Donatus, who was his friend. And he says, it's an incredibly dark, dark world, Donatus, a dark world. But I have discovered in the midst of it a holy and quiet people who have discovered a great joy. They have a great peace. And their joy is 1,000 times better than all the pleasures of this sinful world. Donatus, they are Christians, and I have become one of them. C.S. Lewis, of course, was an agnostic. He was an atheist. And he had no place for God in his life. He used his educational environment, of course, to say there is no God. God's, you know, not to be concerned about. And he was like, you know, Stephen Hawking and some of those. You know, there's no God. But one day, if you read his conversion experience, you will find this simple truth. He said, one day, I felt the compelling embrace of God in my life. And C.S. Lewis became a child of God. The dear Christ entered into his heart and made his home there. And as a result of that, he became one of the greatest defenders of the Christian faith the 20th century has ever known. I think of a couple who went shopping one day. They went to the mall, as many of you do. Now, you know, sometimes, you know, when husband and wives go together, it doesn't quite work out, you know, the way you want to do. I like to go shopping by myself, but you go together. They went to the mall, and they were walking down the aisle there, and she happened to see some dresses, and she went over to these dresses, and she began to look at all these dresses. And when she turned around, as is typical, he was not there. He had disappeared, and she looked everywhere she could to try to find her husband. Nowhere could she find him, and so she pulled her cell phone out of her purse and called him and says, "Where in the world are you at?" And he says, "Well, dear, do you remember that jewelry store where you saw that necklace that you dearly wanted, that diamond necklace that you really wanted?" He says, "Do you remember that place?" And I said at the time, "Well, honey, I don't have any money, but baby, someday that necklace will be yours." And she says, "Oh, yes, dear, I remember that necklace very fondly." He says, "Well, I'm at the Home Depot next door." Can you imagine the disappointment of her heart? Not to say that he's dead meat when he gets home, okay? But wow, you know, the disappointment that fills so many people's lives when we're pumped up, we're expecting the greatest gift ever, and you open it only to, Atlanta was, well, I won't share this, but anyway, you know, the gift that you open, and it's very disappointing. I want to tell you something, friends. Jesus Christ is the greatest gift you will ever receive. He's not only the greatest gift, but the Paul says he's the indescribable gift. And I would hate to refute it, but I was driving down McGalliard, and it says, "Clancy's Car Wash, the perfect gift." Nah, Clancy's Car Wash may be what you want, but it's not the perfect gift. Jesus Christ is the perfect gift. And he has come to make his home within us. He's come to invite us back. He's come to redeem us, to rescue us, and to make us his family.